Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Good to have you on board the middle show of the work week here on CBS Sports Radio. And coming up in, we'll call it 20 minutes, a conversation with Brian Fisher, who covers the national college football scene and has got the up-to-the-minute news and information about where we stand with college football, even as we await a major decision from the ACC coming up on Wednesday. Mark Emmert making some, say, foreboding comments on Tuesday about how concerned he is and that a delay to the start of fall sports makes sense. So we'll talk to Brian. We'll pick his brain. He'll join us coming up in 20 minutes on CBS Sports Radio. There's a lot happening daily, hourly even, when it comes to sports and having to adjust and be flexible. And we talked about ripple effects on last night's show, where it's not just one team in its own bubble and its actions only affect that team and that franchise and its schedule. No, in the case of the Miami Marlins, their actions, their coronavirus outbreak, that's affecting the Orioles, the Yankees, the Phillies. And if they don't get it under control, if they don't see these guys start to test negative, which I've heard that already one of them has, if they don't start to get healthy and get better and see negative tests, it will continue to affect the other teams on their schedule. So baseball has gone ahead and postponed the Marlins' next six games. Well, it's now five more games, but they postponed their next six games on their schedule, including Tuesday night, which was supposed to be another home game against the Orioles. And they believe, and I agree with this totally, that for the Marlins, who now are up to 17 members of their travel party who've tested positive, these Marlins need to get healthy and also have a plan in place so that when they resume, they're all on the same page. The Marlins, according to Derek Jeter, have moved to daily testing. They're staying in Philadelphia. They've decided that for now, they're going to go all in on the testing and the protocols. Except, shouldn't they have been there before an outbreak? Maybe by now you've heard some of the speculation and why they played on Sunday, even though they already had a handful of players who had tested positive. And in addition to those positive tests, they had other tests pending. They didn't know about some of the guys on their roster. And yet they had a group text message going in which the players were consulted and asked, do you want to play? Should we play? Are you okay playing? It was an internal decision to go forward with Sunday's game. Major League Baseball obviously stepped in and started to make decisions, but didn't have all the information because the Marlins didn't have all the information on Sunday. It's one thing to consult your players, ask them how they feel, check in with them, make sure mentally they're okay, not to mention the obvious, making sure they're healthy with the constant testing and needing all of those tests to come back negative before you step on the field. You can't have pending tests and play anyway. We saw multiple times during summer camp that teams completely shut down their facilities or postponed workouts because the tests and the results weren't available. In most cases, if you played anyway, you likely wouldn't be in trouble. But here's the one case, 5 days in, where the Marlins don't err on the side of caution, and look what happens. It turns into an outbreak. So now Major League Baseball is pivoting and is retooling the schedule. But as I say, it's not just affecting the Marlins. It's affecting these other teams that should have been on the schedule and that have been forced to adjust themselves. But I'm really impressed with the way the Yankees have handled it. So as I say, it's one thing to consult your players and to ask them how they feel. It's entirely another to allow the players themselves to make the decisions. And you'll hear the difference with Brian Cashman, with Aaron Boone. They did a video conference call, which they talked about what was happening on Tuesday and how their schedule was being affected and how baseball has essentially pulled two games from their schedule, postponed them, but then inserted a different schedule. And so that means change in travel plans. It means change in your scouting, potentially change in your lineup and change in your rotation. And yet, they're taking it all in stride. And Brian Cashman indicates, we talked to the players. I went to the manager. Ultimately, I consulted with everyone, and there was no hesitation.
When I get on the phone with our manager and ask, you know, 45 minutes before our bus is due to depart for New York, what do you think if we instead pivoted and went to Baltimore so we could play some games down there? And again, everybody seems to be all in. I got on the phone with Zach Britton, same type of conversation, same type of results. He pulled his player union group, and off we are.
They were given options. They had various different directions they could take this. Guys felt like they wanted to play, but ultimately it wasn't up to them. And that's what is, I think, a striking difference here. There was a group text among the players. I'm not sure why Don Mattingly didn't feel like he could step in. Sometimes leadership and the decisions that leaders make are unpopular. Maybe he should have stepped in and said, no, we're not playing. Maybe it should be up to baseball. Clearly, MLB officials did not have all the information. Again, they were pending tests. They didn't have all of their test results back. But it was up to the Marlins. They decided they were going to play. So in this case, baseball gives the Yankees multiple options. Says, hey, you can head back to New York. You can have your games against the Phillies postponed and not fill in that gap. Or you can take the opponent that should have been the Marlins and we can have you play in Baltimore instead so that it's easier for you to make up these Phillies games down the road. So they're not canceling the games against the Phillies, which, I mean, I wanted to see with Joe Girardi going against his former franchise. They're not canceling those games. They're just dropping these Orioles games in so that it gives them more flexibility down the road. And Cashman, as the GM, consulted with his manager, Aaron Boone. They had a player rep who happens to be Zach Britton, who texted with everybody, made sure that they were on board, and then they moved forward. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Definitely, it starts at the top. Cashman is calm. He's measured. Now, he's been around a long time, but he's never faced anything like this. What is different, though, about Brian Cashman as the GM in New York? He constantly lives in a fishbowl. He constantly faces nonstop questions and scrutiny. Everything he does. So he's not uncomfortable with pressure. That's where he lives. He lives with pressure. He lives with difficult decisions. He lives with answering to a family that has very high expectations. He lives with being the general manager of the most successful franchise in sports history. So he lives with that. And to me, that equips him. Even though these are certainly unprecedented times, he's not uncomfortable making tough decisions. He's not uncomfortable being the guy in charge, but that calm, that trickles down. And Aaron Boone has had it since he got onto the scene. He's definitely been a guy who doesn't seem, it's not that he's unflappable. We see him get emotional now and then, but he's definitely a guy who handles everything in stride himself, partly because of his experience in the majors, but also he was on national TV and he had to make a transition to being a media member. And so he's a guy who handles challenges with humor, but also with that same calm. And he had his guys staying in Philly and they were waiting to see what would happen.
We're pretty much by ourselves. So there's gym access. I know a couple of our pitchers were able to get outside and actually play catch. We've had team meals and things like that. We have some really good dedicated spaces in the hotel. So guys are able to move around and kind of get out of their room at least a little bit. So really it's been, I think by and large, a pretty comfortable experience for us over the last 48 hours.
How about that? A comfortable experience? When you've got guys all over Major League Baseball who are freaking out, it's a bit of a gut check. And Aaron Boone says, it's been fine. We're comfortable. Again, it starts at the top. And certainly being a member of the Yankees organization where there is nonstop pressure, nonstop eyeballs on everything you do, nonstop voices who are willing to weigh in on your decisions, that pressure then comes with an experience that not every general manager and manager in sports has. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We will see then Yankees and Orioles. Oh, aren't the Orioles excited about that? 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line. In addition, you've got our Twitter, After Hours CBS, if you would like to see Joe Kelly making faces, or if you would like to, much more importantly, if you would like to send your questions for Ask Amy Anything, you can do that on either our show Twitter or on our Facebook page. We'd love to hear from you. It's part of our hump show. And we're inside the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? It's the way to go. Rocket Can. Now let's quick segue. It's a radio term that means pivot. Sometimes you segue easily. The two things go together. Sometimes not so much. But I'm segueing. Doesn't sound right. I am going to take the segue, not the subway, but the segue to Aaron Rodgers because I promised you that I would. And one of the things I'm working on in my radio career, and I've never been great at it, and sometimes I do a better job and sometimes I don't, but when I'm in the moment, I often forget what I teased and what I said to you before our last break. And so I was getting mad at myself and telling my mom, from now on, I've got to pay off of my teases. I have to deliver what I told the peeps that I would. And so I told you that we would hear from Aaron Rodgers, and we're going to. Rodgers was a guest on the Ringer podcast, and he was talking to Kyle Brandt, and he had some really interesting comments about the Jordan Love draft pick with the Packers, how they moved up to get him on that Thursday night, the first round, but also about the way that people are comparing his situation to Brett Favre's. He did say, the writing's on the wall. You can see that the end is coming with the Packers. I know how this business works. You don't draft a quarterback in the first round and move up to get him if you're not planning on using him at some point. And he says, that's where my experience got me. I can see it because I went through it with Brett Favre. But his description of his reaction on draft night is pretty interesting.
When they traded up, I was definitely a little perked up a little bit. And then I got a text because everything's so delayed. I got a text from my agent. He said, he just texted quarterback. And I was like, oh, wow, okay. I knew it was going to be one of those nights where the people are going to start calling and there's going to be, hey, you know, everything fine, you okay? I'm like, yeah, fine. Like, you know, I wasn't elated by the pick, you know, especially being one game away from the Super Bowl and feeling like we're a couple players away. But at the same time, I understand it's a business.
He said, I got a text from my agent. All it said was quarterback. Oh, huh. That's interesting. So the Packers move up. They grab a QB. He's thinking they're moving up to get maybe a receiver, another player that we need to fill in a hole. We're so close. And instead, they grab a quarterback. So he admits to being surprised. He admits to thinking, huh, that's interesting. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Again, he doesn't believe the comparisons with Brett Favre line up perfectly, but he does understand why people are making them. But yet he wants to point out this is not the same situation.
Brett had talked about retiring for a few years before that. So, you know, I've talked about playing in my 40s. So, when people start talking about the parallels to this and that, well, I fell to 24. They traded up and drafted Jordan. So, like, I see the parallels based on age for sure. And I think it was important for me to go through that experience to understand really what he's going through.
I like that perspective from Aaron. He's not thinking about, hey, this happened to Brett. I can relate now because it's happening to me. No, instead he's thinking, I've been in Jordan's shoes. I know what it's like to be Jordan Love right now, which I thought was really interesting. I hadn't thought about it from that perspective, that angle before. And he points out, Brett had talked about retiring. The Packers were looking to move on. Oh, I remember all of this so vividly. Oh, my goodness. I went on a cruise with some family from Seattle up into Alaska. An incredible vacation. My favorite vacation of my entire life. We only had one or two channels on the in-house TV. And one of them was ESPN, which actually was my employer at the time. I left for vacation, and Brett Favre, would he or won't he, return to football was the top story. 10 days later, I came back. It was still the same story. And, oh my gosh, that's the only thing I saw on TV for 10 days was speculation about Brett Favre. So, yes, Aaron points out he'd been talking about retirement. The Packers were moving on. Also, Green Bay didn't move up to grab me. I slipped all the way to 24-0. He says that, and yet you could feel the emotions there, but how much it ticks him off still. And so he wants to play into his 40s, even if it's not with the Packers, and he stated that. Aaron Rodgers with Kyle Brandt on The Ringer. Now, coming up, speaking of Kyle Brandt, really interesting question I want to throw out there, something that he has suggested, and I want to know your reaction, plus Brian Fisher of College Football Talk. He will join us. We'll get the up-to-the-minute details about where we are with one of the most popular sports in our nation.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
The voice of SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey in mid-July. A wait-and-see approach as much as possible. And yet it's pretty clear that some of these conferences have their own ideas about how college football and fall sports should be handled. Who makes the decision? That's a major question that I have. And what will we hear from the ACC coming up on Wednesday? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. You can find us on Twitter, After Hours CBS. Also on our Facebook page, named after the show, we're looking for your questions for Ask Amy Anything that comes up next hour on The Hump Show. But right now, we're going to spend some time with Brian Fisher of College Football Talk. Covers the college scene on a national level. And Brian, we heard some pretty strong comments from NCAA President Mark Emmert on Tuesday. He says he's very concerned about the season moving forward. He's still hedging his bets a little. But what do you make of what he said publicly?
Well, I think he kind of spoke for a lot of presidents. And let's face it, that's who he is working for, is a lot of these college presidents, about being simply concerned that everything going on in the country and how much the NCAA is going to kind of fit into that picture. And so, the comments that he had, certainly to ESPN and others this week, I'm sure are echoed around the country with a lot of these presidents seeing, kind of the danger zone that we're in terms of not only making decisions, but certainly coming up on a critical time for moving forward for everything.
What are they waiting for? And I don't mean that to be snide. It's a sincere question. What are they waiting for before they would make any type of definitive decision?
You know, I think they're just waiting for extra time, to be honest. I know a lot of the presidents are frankly, you know, wanting to, you know, wait for certainly the NFL to kind of make some moves for Major League Baseball to see what's happening after the Marlins situation. I think really everybody is kind of just hoping for a little more time, getting a little bit more information, especially at the local level. I think that's, you know, you talk with athletic directors, you talk with the administrators across the country, just seeing some improvement in those numbers on a local level, I think would at least allow them to be a little more comfortable at doing things and moving forward. So when you talk about the Big 12 and the ACC and the SEC kind of waiting around, I think that's you know, kind of key in terms of you know, what's going on and just really giving themselves a little bit more time to make a more impactful decision.
When it comes to football versus all of the other sports, could the decision-making process be different? Could it be separate for football as opposed to the other sports that don't earn revenue?
I think it's absolutely separate. And let's face it, you know, that is the big moneymaker. That's what the athletic directors are, you know, really judged on. I think it's certainly what the presidents understand is propping up a lot of these athletic departments. And so that is where the focus is going to be. You know, I think if you had to sacrifice, you know, your soccer teams, your swimming teams, you know, maybe make push those seasons to the spring in order to save football and really focus on that. I think you would see a lot of athletic directors vote for that. And, you know, I think that's why certainly last week when the board of directors met there was some concern over, you know, maybe they would cancel those fall sports. You know, everybody understands that football has got to kind of make the decision for all the other sports first. You know, if you can bring back football, then maybe you can kind of get into the weeds and bring back some of the others. But without those other sports, without those non-revenue sports, there's probably a little chance that football is going to happen as well. So everybody wants to kind of make sure that they do understand the optics for this, and they understand that there is also one sport that is kind of driving the bus in terms of the money and in terms of the decision-making.
Right, so the issue is that if you don't have football, many of these other sports will suffer and will not be funded. And maybe one year doesn't make a huge difference, but as much as optics matter, and I agree with you, and we're talking about equality and everyone having the same opportunities, Title IX, et cetera, at the same time, without the football money, a lot of these athletic department budgets won't be funded, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, you're talking, I know Barry Alvarez has come out and said, you know, you talk about, you know, nine-figure losses, you know, Iowa State, you know, similar numbers. You know, this is many millions of dollars. And even the big-time programs in the Big Ten and the SEC and the Pac-12, without football money, they are hurting because they have really kind of put themselves into this corner with years and years of really spending up to their limit. I mean, it's basically, you know, if you can raise $5 million, you're going to end up spending it. It might be on, you know, new soccer shorts. It might be on, you know, a new football analyst. You know, you end up going to spend that every year. And with margins that thin, you know, it really does put a lot of these schools in a precarious situation because they don't have that rainy day fund. It has simply been money in and money out for so many years right now. And all that bloat, all that extra administrators, extra coaching staff, extra facilities that, you know, you can certainly question whether it was needed. That's kind of coming back to bite a lot of these programs, and a reason why I think everybody is so focused on this decision, knowing they're going to lose millions of dollars no matter what in 2020 and likely in 2021. It's really just a matter of how much and how can we really keep that to a minimum.
So just to clarify, Brian, is the final decision that of Mark Emmerts, or is the final decision that of the conference commissioners?
Yeah, I think we're basically going to see the final. Certainly the Pac-12 has already made their decision in terms of football, and they would like to proceed with that conference-only schedule. I think we're going to eventually see certainly the state and local leaders get a little bit more involved over the next week or so in terms of pushing what they want. I think in the end, this is ultimately a decision that rests with those local authorities. Number one, if they're going to permit you know, these teams and 100-plus individuals starting to, you know, get in close contact, not only just working out, but practicing, playing games, traveling across the country. You know, it's really going to be those local health authorities that are the ultimate decision makers, whether they have restrictions or not. Then it's going to fall on the presidents, which are very risk adverse at this point. You know, they really just want to see their schools open up so they can get those revenues coming in. And then really at the backseat of the bus is kind of the conference commissioners, kind of hearing all this, trying to guide the decision as best they can. And certainly next week, the week after that, into early August, we're going to start to see those conference commissioners start to really relay those decisions that are being made in their leagues, and we'll kind of get some movement on that. But until then, it's just a lot of talking amongst the athletic directors, trying to provide the best information to their president and on up the food chain as we kind of get closer to the ultimate kind of point where it's a no-go decision. And some of these presidents are going to have to vote for the fall season as we know it.
Mm. Brian Fisher of College Football Talk with us here after hours on CBS Sports Radio. Brian, the conference-only model is one that multiple conferences have already adopted or at least indicated that they would like to try. What is the benefit of doing games only inside your own conference?
Well, I think it's twofold. You obviously, the testing protocols, all the stuff that you would need to have in place, you know, can really be standardized across the conference. You know, an Iowa can be the same as a Michigan State, even though they're you know, in certainly different areas of the country with different, you know, viral caseloads across the region. So you can at least standardize that part. And then the other thing it really does is give these schools, give these conferences flexibility. You know, they can move it back a week. You know, if one team ends up not being able to play, whether it be local restrictions, whether it be somebody on the team, you know, such as we saw this last week with Rutgers and Michigan State simply just shutting down, they can move those to the end of the year. They can change, you know, how they kind of play their games and determine their conference champion. So flexibility is really the key. And the reason why kind of the Big Ten and the Pac-12 kind of jumped to the lead at this point in terms of going conference only, they wanted that flexibility and they wanted to be clear to, I think, everybody else, saying, look, you know, we don't want to deal with all these contracts. We don't want to deal with these non-conference opponents. We don't want to deal with all this other. We just want to focus on really getting games as much as possible. And in order to do that, that's going conference only. And so I think there is an eventual decision coming with, you know, the Big Ten, the ACC, others. They might not be conference only at this point, but it certainly does trend to having that flexibility this fall.
Flexibility may be key if college football and the other sports can get on the field, the court, the ice. There's a lot of other sports outside of football, but football is the moneymaker, and that's the headline, the high-profile story. And so Mark Emmert says he's very concerned. The ACC has a big announcement anticipated on Wednesday. We're spending a few minutes with Brian Fisher of College Football Talk. Brian, hang on. We'll get right back to you. Have to get in our update and a quick break.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Matt Hasselbeck, former NFL QB, obviously a Boston College guy too, comparing the NFL to college football and the thought of completing their seasons and what it might take and how it's different. That's from the Pat McAfee Show here on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for tuning into our Hump Show. We're spending a few minutes with Brian Fisher of College Football Talk. So let's jump right back in here, and we're putting college football under a microscope. But Brian, when you compare some of the other protocols that we've seen from the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, and you look at the guidelines they're putting in place, extensive guidelines, are there pieces of these other sports and their setups that could work for college football?
Well, you know, I think, you know, prior to this week, you know, I would have said baseball is kind of the one that everybody is really circling because of that travel component. You know, they're testing multiple times a week. Obviously, you're talking about limiting, you know, the contacts that players have and in terms of not only the ballparks themselves, but, you know, they're playing games regularly. You've got those shuttles back and forth between the team hotels. You're staying on the road. You know, I think a lot of people around college athletics and college football in particular were really pointing to Major League Baseball and saying if they can't pull this off, if they can't do it with their testing, with the amount of you know, resources that they've pumped into that, there's no chance college football has. Now, we'll see after this week with the Marlins situation how that affects things. But you know, I think baseball was definitely put up there as kind of the big thing. And obviously, there's the NFL and that whole picture in terms of what they're going to do over the next, you know, couple of weeks, next month, leading into their games. And I think everybody also, you know, is really looking at, you know, what worked and what didn't work overseas, especially in Europe with European soccer. Mm. You know, I think, you know, you look at the Bundesliga coming back in Germany, you know, they didn't have a single positive test. So obviously the case numbers in Germany were a little bit lower, but the testing, the face shields and training, that sort of stuff really kind of set the early standard. And then we kind of had it refined by Major League Baseball. And that's really where a lot of these colleges are going to take those kind of game plans and really tailor them to what suits them this fall.
Just to clarify, we're looking at a model that has no fans in the stands, right? Despite what anybody else might be doing, that's pretty much off the table.
I feel like it. I know there's stuff, Ohio State coming out and saying that they were going to have, 20,000 fans at the Shoe, and Texas is modeling 50%. But I just cannot see it. Given where we are combating the virus, giving all that needs to be put in place to have it. I mean, just to have, 50,000 fans, there's not even fans across, Europe where the caseload is significantly lower. The virus is just less of a factor there, and they're being very cautious and being very optimistic, and maybe late this fall, October, November, to where fans could maybe return to sporting events in smaller numbers. I cannot see 50,000 people down there in Austin. I cannot see 20,000 people. And we saw the governor of Ohio kind of come out and said, well, I didn't really hear about that plan. I'm not so sure about that. And I think you're going to see more local and state health authorities kind of step in and say, I know you need the revenue guys, but we're not in a place where you can have 20,000 people in one spot six Sundays a year or six Saturdays this fall.
Are those decisions, though, also governed by the local mandates? Because there's a major piece of this as well. Governors from state to state have a bit of autonomy, and so one governor can decide one thing, and another governor can decide something else.
Yeah, no, I think that is absolutely a key component in this. And you're not going to see fans at a sporting event at USC or UCLA. You're certainly not going to see it, at a Syracuse. I think there are certainly some governors that have been pretty clear in terms of, you're not going to have fans at games. Certainly, if Major League Baseball, if the NFL, cannot bring fans back, I seriously doubt that's going to happen in colleges. And, you got to keep in mind, too, that throughout all of this planning, it can all be for naught once the students really come back onto campuses in greater numbers. I think that is the real concern with a lot of people. Not only just having fans from different parts of the state, different areas, whatnot. I think there's real concern, once the students get back on campus, how are they going to manage that? How are they going to have enough tests for all of them? I think there's just so many unknowns. I think a lot of these schools, as much as they would like that revenue, as much as they want those 20,000 fans in the stand to be cheering on touchdowns this fall, I just have a hard time believing, based on everything I've heard and seen and read, that the state and local health authorities are going to be comfortable with having that happen. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe it happens. Maybe somebody kind of sticks their neck out. But I think at the end of the day, if pro teams in areas that have the virus under a little better control than what we've had in regions in this country are not having fans, I have a hard time believing that's going to be the case this fall at college football stadiums.
Brian Fisher of College Football Talk on After Hours with us here, CBS Sports Radio. So can you imagine that? At some of these stadiums that are known for the noise, the atmosphere, can you imagine what it's like if they're empty?
I've watched a lot of MAC games over the years and a lot of lower level football, so I think it can be done. It's definitely going to be a weird feeling, almost like a scrimmage. I go back to a couple of closed practices and scrimmages that you would catch here and there. That's basically what it's going to feel like. And I imagine the Fox and ESPN are going to pump in crowd noise. They're going to do what is necessary to kind of give it an element of feel if we do get games this fall. But at the end of the day, this is a unique season, and I think everybody understands that. Everybody understands that things are going to be a little bit different, not only in terms of what we see on the field, but also what we're hearing, what we're seeing in terms of the television product as well. And it's going to be unique. That's certainly for sure.
This is it's so like 2020 that we have far more questions than we have answers, for sure. It's really a wait and see approach, and it seems like the atmosphere changes every day. But how confident are you in the leadership in college football? And I know we're talking about sports in general in the fall, but the conference commissioners to make those decisions, to be able to come together and find some common ground and make decisions that have the best interests of the schools and the players in mind.
Well, you know, you talk with the conference commissioners, they are acting kind of in the best interest of their schools. And I think that's what's led to a little bit of friction, certainly, you know, in terms of when the Big Ten made their decision. I don't think there was any surprise that they made it, but it was more of a shock that, hey, I thought we were kind of all on the same page, going to announce it at the same time. And that has led to a little bit of friction. But, you know, the bottom line is every school is certainly out for their own, and they're going to make the decision that's right for their campus, for their athletic department, for their football team. And, you know, that filters on up the line for these conference commissioners as well, with their leagues. Now, everybody would love to play 12 games. I don't think that's going to end up happening anywhere in the country, but, they're going to play, you know, hopefully as many as they can possibly get in. And, you know, we'll certainly see. It's just going to be a strange 2020 season.
Right.
And I think as much as everybody, you know, wants to have everything close to normalcy, I think there is certainly an understanding as we get kind of down to crunch time with the decision making, we've got to make the right decision, and we've got to be flexible in terms of, you know, what's going to come at us in this fall in terms of games being played, games not being played, and hopefully there will be some college football, but even though it's not going to look like what we're certainly used to the last couple of years.
So then what do you expect to hear from the ACC presidents and chancellors on Wednesday?
Based on everything that I've been hearing, I don't think there's going to be too much of an announcement. Now, I think it's always difficult with the decisions coming from these college presidents, the fact that, you know, you lock them in a room, or in this case, you know, a Microsoft Team meeting or a Zoom meeting, you know, the direction of the discourse can go away nobody can really predict. So do I expect a decision? No. But, you know, if the ACC presidents kind of get together and they say, you know, here's the options on the table, here's what we're kind of facing, maybe somebody gets skittish. I mean, you go back to March, you know, when the conference tournament started to, you know, really get, you know, get canceled and have decisions made. You know, a lot of it kind of came down to a domino of the Duke basketball team saying we're not playing. And that was a decision from the Duke president there. I would imagine, you know, we could have something similar over the next couple of weeks in terms of one president kind of getting skittish and saying, you know what, we're just not going to play. And that leads to a whole host of other decisions. And I think that is a concern amongst the athletic directors, but also an understanding that, let's keep talking this out. I know everybody wants to meet. Let's get caught up on plans, not only Wednesday in the ACC, but the SEC later this week and beyond. And let's kind of push this decision as much as we can later in the fall to where we have a better grasp of what the kind of ground rules are and what the kind of situation is going forward.
Certainly now that we're getting close, we can expect there to be a greater sense of urgency. All right, you can find Brian on Twitter at Brian, B-R-Y-A-N-D, Fisher, F-I-S-C-H-E-R. Covers college football on the national scene for College Football Talk, and you can also find him on Athlon Sports. It's great to talk to you, and thank you so much for answering all of our questions as best you can.
Yes, it is a changing situation, but always happy to talk college football in whatever form it's going to take this season.
A changing situation, a fluid situation, an unprecedented, uncertain situation. How many times have you heard those words over the past few months? And we still don't have all the answers about college football, college sports in general. There are many more athletes affected beyond football. But in addition to waiting on these conference commissioners and the presidents of the universities as well, the NCAA has said that teams are allowed to begin their seasons as early as August 29th. Now, at this point, it's still an individual conference and school decision. But you may know the Big 12 recently moved up its season openers against FCS opponents. Okay, so they're trying to get teams on their schedules. They're not wanting to go conference only. They still want to play 12 games each. And so they're trying to tinker with their schedules, and they have moved up games for Kansas and Oklahoma to August 29th. And the NCAA has said, okay, we'll allow that. They actually call it week zero. We'll allow that right now. But we have yet to hear from all the conferences. And as Brian points out, some of these conferences have very different ideas in very different parts of the country about what college sports and college football specifically should look like in, I mean, we're talking about a month from now. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line. It's sponsored by Geico. Did you know right now Geico offers an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? And that's on top of what Geico can already save you. What are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. 855-212-4CBS. You've got a little under an hour to send your questions for Ask Amy Anything. I suppose you can send them after the fact, but they won't be noticed. So send those to our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on our Facebook page, where it's a lot of doom and gloom. And that brings me to this question I want to throw out to you. You guys may know Kyle Brandt. He's on NFL Network as part of Good Morning Football. He's the guy who interviewed Aaron Rodgers, and Rodgers told him that he poured, I think he said, four fingers of tequila when the Packers drafted Jordan Love. But this is what Kyle tweeted. It would have been Monday. There's a segment of the NFL media that seems to be almost rooting for COVID to affect the season. They want it. They see the Marlins news and say, yep, lots of luck, football. These are people who make their livings off football. I don't get it. Retweeted 4,000 times, favorited 18,000 times. I haven't come across anyone in the NFL specifically who is rooting for COVID to affect the season, shut down the season, but I will say this. I feel like there is glee. It's this excitement, this joy every time another headline pops up, like the Marlins and their coronavirus outbreak, and people are so quick to jump off the ledge and say, that's it, shut it all down, it's done, it's over with. I really do feel like there's a large segment of our population who are rooting for that. What about you?
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.